the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked.
Hello, this is your host for Education Now, Athena Melville. And in this December 15th Education Now radio podcast launch, we welcome Peggy Robertson, who serves the public educational community through social activism with United Opt Out National, the movement to end punitive public school testing. And Peggy also has a blog called Peg with Pen. Peggy Robertson is a former public school teacher who taught kindergarten, first, second, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, beginning her career in Missouri and continuing in Kansas for a total of 10 years. She was hired by Richard C. Owen Publishers in 2001 to serve as a learning network coordinator and spent the next 3 years training teacher leaders and administrators in educational theory and practice in the state of Colorado, and as well around the country during the summer months. In 2004, she was hired as the literacy coordinator for the Adams 50 School District in Westminster, Colorado. While working in Adams 50, she mentored teachers and administrators and supported them in the writing and implementation of school development plans. She earned her master's degree in English as a second language at Southeast Missouri State University. Peggy is also part of the Save Our Schools March contingency. You can find them on the web at www.saveourschoolsmarch.org. The United Opt Out movement got its start from a Facebook page Peggy and others started called Opt Out of the State Test, the National Movement. They started the page in August of this year, and it is rapidly growing as it approaches well over 850 members. Meanwhile, there has been a call to action for educators to unite behind the United Opt Out National Movement to end punitive public school testing. This call to action states, and I will read it here for you, "Call for action, educators unite. As public educators committed to democratic principles, we are charged to 1. Advocate for authentic reform initiatives that support public education to ensure pre-K through 12th grade students develop the critical thinking and process skills necessary to become informed citizens capable of supporting an effective democracy. And 2. And in support of this goal, resist and support resistance of forces that seek to connect standardized testing to teacher evaluation. The current political climate is marked by powerful attacks on public institutions, including schools, colleges, universities, and public employee unions. These attacks are dangerous because public education is an essential component of an effective democracy. For citizens to self-govern, they must be able to engage in the process of recreating society in meaningful, intentional ways. Today, neoliberal policies threaten the ability of public institutions to foster critical, thoughtful, active citizens. Education is being viewed as a commodity, and the labor of teachers and students at all levels is being exploited as a means to generate data for private entities, which then, more often than not, use those data to confirm the preconceived ineffectiveness of the public institutions themselves. As a public institution that prepares future educators, we must model the critical stance that we want our teacher candidates to develop. We must not simply comply with policies and regulations that we know are unjust, flawed, and designed to undermine and destroy the power of public sphere. These actions may seem unnecessary and excessive. However, the actions of neoliberal reformers are, in fact, far more extreme and debilitating to our society, especially to those who are at least powerful. Moreover, we can lead a movement that involves schools of education throughout the state and nation. Our efforts could have a significant impact by harnessing the power of education for social justice. If these actions seem misguided, considering the following question, what would we expect our students to do? We hope to graduate educators who advocate for democracy and social justice. Therefore, we must demonstrate our own commitment to these values. The new teachers' evaluation system exploits the labors of students, teachers, and administrators in an endeavor that 1. Shows no evidence of benefiting learners. 2. Enriches private entities who develop and distribute the examinations. And 3. Is designed to prove that public institutions are deficient, setting the stage for privatization, a strategy that will deplete public schools and diminish the overall quality of education for all except the affluent, privileged classes. In the new assessment system, the expertise and energies of students, teachers, and administrators are expended in order to provide data that enriches private entities and impoverishes public schools. This is not acceptable. Therefore, we recommend that school districts in states such as New York that are subject to the damaging effects of evaluation systems based on standardized assessments should refuse to participate. Teachers and administrators should educate community members about high-stakes standardized assessments, and parents and their children should consider declining to provide data that only harm the quality of their education. In New York State, that means that students in grade 4 and grade 8 should not be subjected to the respective state examinations. To encourage this action, we pledge to promote United Opt Out, a grassroots movement to end punitive public school testing. And of course, the statement goes on, public education is the foundation for developing the minds, attitudes, and values of students to become informed decision makers, able to engage in effective democracy in meaningful ways. A system organized around teaching to the test will not provide students with the skills and dispositions necessary to have a meaningful voice in a democratic and just society. And then they say, please join us as we speak out against and boycott examinations that will be used only to reinforce conditions of injustice and corporatization and undermine the quality of our public education system. Education is neither a business nor a competition. People are more than data points. Education is more than a number. Tell your school district officials that children should not take part in the destruction of public education and encourage others to do the same. And then there is a place to go add your name, and you can find this call to action on the web. Just Google Educators United Equity Call to Action. And they're at www.ourcity-ourschools.org/statewide-call-action-public-education. Or as I say, just Google Educators United Equity Call to Action, and you will find them on the web. Now, let's get to this wonderful interview with Peggy Robertson. Hello, Peggy Robertson, and welcome to Education Now. It's a really a beautiful, crisp day here in Mendocino County. I don't know what it's like there for you in Denver, but
chilly.
Is it chilly?
Very chilly, yes. We had snow yesterday.
Ah, snow. Well, was it a beautiful kind of snow, or was it, you know, really treacherous?
Oh, it was beautiful. You know, I love snow. That's part of the reason I'm here. But a little bit treacherous driving, but overall it was really nice.
Oh, good. That's great to hear. Well, I'm so excited to have you on because I feel like this is really what we're going to be talking about today is really at the crux of what is involved with the public education, in my opinion. And I've already told our listeners about you, Peggy, about your life and your work as a teacher. So I'd like to start by talking about the United Opt Out movement and what it is exactly and why and when it got started.
Okay, well, United Opt Out National started on August 16th, so it really has not been around that long. And I started it after the Save Our Schools March because I was kind of, you know, the time was right, and I was listening to educators talk, and I kept hearing again and again this idea of opting out and that this is one form of civil disobedience we can take in order to reclaim public schools for children. And so I began by just starting a Facebook page. And within, I want to say it was 48 hours, we had maybe 300 to 400 members. And then we created a website. We have a team of 6 administrators, including myself now. We're all across the country. And really, we spend a lot of time during our weekdays when we have time speaking to parents, to educators, and supporting them and trying to figure out how to opt out in their state. What are the positive ramifications for doing such a thing? Because a lot of people think it's very radical. And how can we use this method of civil disobedience to reclaim our public schools? So that's kind of the gist of it.
Right, and when you say opt out, just so that it's very clear to our listeners that, you know, we're talking about opting out of testing.
That is the ultimate goal. However, we recognize that for teachers, a lot of them, you know, they have to administer the state test or they could lose their job. So we have focused a lot of attention on parents because the parents are the ones that can reclaim the public schools. The educators, for the most part, their hands are tied. We do see some educators beginning to step up now. A good example is the Long Island principals that have expressed their dislike for the teacher evaluation process there. But there are a lot of ways to opt out, and we encourage educators to consider other ways, such as not voting for political candidates that support high-stakes testing. But the parents, bottom line is, the parents could change everything if they recognized that the state test was harmful to students, it's harmful to our communities, it punishes our schools, and ultimately sets them up to fail. So we do spend a very large amount of our time focusing on how to support parents and really changing the narrative about public education.
So you spend a lot of time empowering the parents.
Yes. This week, I've been working really hard with a group of parents in Indiana, and a lot of what we do is we really dig into the issue within that state to determine what are the repercussions they're setting up there and how can we more or less fight against that.
Yes. Yeah, I...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm here in Colorado, and although the State Department of Education will try to tell parents that there are very serious consequences for opting out here in Colorado, the truth is there are not. If students opt out here in Colorado, it counts as non-participatory, which means it doesn't affect the overall school AYP score. So it's different for every state. And the bottom line is this. Regardless of the repercussions, parents can opt their children out of the test. You cannot force a child to take a state test. But parents also need to be aware of how does that affect their school, how does that affect the student, and how can they move forward to keep those repercussions from happening. And the best way to do that is to create a mass opt-out. And I say this again and again because if an entire school, even if 6%, if you could get 6% of students to opt out, the results are void. So we really push for intense pockets of opting out because then they can't punish an entire school if no one took the test. So the question we pose a lot is, well, on test day, what if nobody showed up? What can they do us? Nothing.
Right.
And so this is our first step in reclaiming public schools.
The issue of opting out here in California is that most parents don't know that they can opt out, that there is a way to opt out. And I've had a guest on, Margot Porter, who told us in California how you do that. I was so grateful. She's so fantastic. But I knew, of course, because I had a private school, and I had been quite involved in the public system before I pulled my kids out of public school and started homeschooling, which then evolved into a private Montessori school, that there was how you opt out. I only tested if my parents wanted the student tested.
Uh-huh.
And I always advised, and personally, I started testing my children when they were about in the fourth grade. But that was the California Comprehensive Test that actually had science and history in it. You know, it was really, we used it more as an indicator of, you know, were we really challenging the student? Instead of a marker of like, are you going as fast as the other person and that kind of thing. So this whole testing thing is a gold mine, the standardized test. It's a gold mine for the companies who produce the tests. And as Stephen Krachin, it's also someone who's done, you know, the experts in the field like Krachin and Jonathan Cozzol, the reformers are not listening to. And
right.
Somewhere down the line, public school sold out. When they first started talking about these standardized tests, that's when the unions and, you know, should have been there and said, no, that's opposed to best practices, which is what all of our teaching programs are like. In our teaching programs, we teach that the child is in the center, that's what you're concerned with, and this goes against that, you know, and so, no, we will not say yes to this. Now, I don't know why that happened, why it was never challenged. I just know I took my kids out of school.
Well, I think a lot of it is there are a lot of legislative measures being put forth by groups like ALEC, which is a think tank that actually they're meeting this week in Scottsdale, Arizona. And what they do is they try to push forward bills that create opportunities for privatization. And Stephen Krachin, actually, he has stated that I think New York City spent $500 million this year just on wiring the buildings to take the test, and he extrapolated that to see what that would look like nationwide. And it came to $45 billion. That's just, you know, one aspect of it.
Right.
But they have privatized so many other aspects, including teacher training, the textbook industry, the test prep industry. There's so much tutoring and stuff out there just for kids to prepare for these tests.
Right.
They have privatized superintendent and principal training through the Eli Broad Foundation. So, you know, I feel like we just weren't awake. And I'm with you. I kind of look at it and I say, how did this happen? And the sad truth is it has happened. And I think the good news, the positive thing that is going on now is that teachers are waking up and they're realizing that their voice counts and they really need to express their opinion in whatever shape or form they can. Parents need to express their opinion. And we really need to change the narrative that mainstream media is putting forth, which is our schools are failing, teachers are bad, you know, all these horrible stories. And I, as a teacher, And I think I can speak for most teachers, we all would agree that schools can be improved. I mean, that's what learning is about. And I think that all of us would love to continue to improve schools and focus on alternative assessments to standardized testing. But in order for that to happen, we have got to speak up and change that narrative. And people like Stephen Krashen and Jonathan Kozol and Susan Ohanian, I mean, all those people continue to spread this message. And I feel like, you know, the time is now.
Oh, yes, the time is just is now and it's past time. Also here in California, I mean, my granddaughters opted out. Their parents said no, our daughters, you know, will not be tested. And then, the oldest is in high school in a junior, she took the test for the very first time, did fantastic. So this whole idea that we need to just kill their childhood,
yeah.
Cut recess, no recess, yeah. No arts,
no music, no PE, no nap time for kindergarten.
Yeah, that rob them of their childhood, no outdoor time, no building with the blocks and pretend. I mean, that really is it is so opposed to everything that we know about psychology. And what's good for the child, it's like a cancer in the system of a system that's supposed to care about the whole child.
And so I am just
so excited that, you know, there's a national movement. When I started this radio show, it was to empower parents because I closed my private school, and I enjoyed that for 30 years, but I knew that public school was I believed in public school, but
right.
I wasn't willing to sacrifice my kids to what they were doing to it. And I know that there are lots of wonderful teachers in public school, that the majority are. And if the reformers would just listen to the experts in child growth and development, and to Jonathan Kozol and to Stephen Krashen, who've made education and the child their life.
Yes.
Then we wouldn't be having these problems. And so I'm so happy that there's a national opt-out movement. Now, do you have some things planned for the future, for the days and the months ahead?
We do. Our website, you can access our weekly actions at our website, which is UnitedOptOut.com. And so we have an action that I post every Saturday morning. So that's one aspect of what we do. But in addition to that, we're creating some bigger actions, the first one being January 7th. And we have declared this National Opt-Out Day. We are asking that parents send in letters or postcards, whatever it may be, to their school district stating their plan to hopefully opt out of the state test. Now, for parents that aren't ready to take that action, they can state their dislike for high-stake testing. However, I would encourage everyone to opt out. Again, if we have mass opt-out, they cannot use test data to punish students, schools, and teachers. So that's the big one, January 7th. We're hoping that the Occupy movements in different states will endorse this, perhaps. We're working hard at making that happen. But anybody can make that happen. If you just go and talk to your Occupy movement, the likelihood is that they'll say yes, because they also would like to see corporate education reform end. So that's one. The next one is we are going to occupy the Department of Education in D.C. from March 30th to April 2nd. And we are going there to express our dislike for high-stakes testing and corporate education reform. So if you'd like to join us there, that would be wonderful. And if not, if you'd like to initiate a occupation of your state Department of Education, we're encouraging people to do that. If we could get it going nationwide and make mainstream media, very much like the Save Our Schools March, I think, again, we could turn the tide here.
Do you feel that the march on D.C. was successful?
I think it was successful in the fact that we did make mainstream media. We did have tons of teachers show up and begin to express their voice. I think that teachers' voices have been so silenced. I know mine was. It's part of the reason I got out of the system, because I wasn't allowed to speak my mind. So I think that that was a major shift for teachers to get out there and really, in a very intense way, express their dislike for what was going on in public schools today. So yes, I do think it was a success.
That's great. I know I was just so excited and gave it all the press that I possibly could. But then I was very disappointed with the way that the mainstream covered it. At least from my perspective, it seemed like they kept asking on celebrities and corporations to speak to the issue instead of teachers or experts in the field, like experts in child growth and psychology. There were none of those. They were all, I think they had on somebody who taught once or something.
I agree.
And so
Matt Damon was the big name.
Right, not Jonathan Cazale. I don't have anything against Matt Damon. It's just
right.
that we have spent a fortune. These people are renowned. You know, Cazale is renowned for what he's done. Cratchin, teachers just flock to hear him speak. So why weren't these people? And that's it. You know, it's because the corporates do not want the public.
Right.
It breaks my.
It's horrible, isn't it? I mean, every day I wake up and I think to myself, wow, I'm in this profession that is just so amazing and can do such incredible things to support our country. And it is so sad that our country does not embrace that. I mean, the truth is our country does not value education. If they did, this wouldn't be happening. And yeah. Matt Damon would not have been the big name at Save Our Schools March. So a lot of people said, well, at least we got the word out. And I'm like, yes, we did. We got the word out. I really hope that this summer, whatever actions occur around Save Our Schools or, for example, United Opt Out, I hope, like you, that educators are in the limelight because they're the ones that understand what's going on. And what a lot of people don't realize is the people in charge right now have absolutely no background in education. The people making the decisions that affect every child in this country don't know anything about education. They know about business. So what they have done is they've put a dollar sign on every child's head, and they are using that strategy or that thinking to create profit at the expense of our children. And I don't think people quite recognize that, but that's really the name of the game right now.
I know that it is. And I once again, I just really feel that this should have been, the unions should have been concerned about this the moment that this notion of standardized testing and its use to the extent that it's been used was brought into the picture. If they were really cared about teaching and the children. And, I mean, our universities are renowned. People come here from other countries to go to school. And yet we don't realize what we have. We have this treasure. And really, that's another thing, is that creating this false picture that you really need to charge to go to university for students who are born and raised in this country, and even those who weren't, the Dream Act and people who are here and helping our, in whatever capacity, their children should be treated with in utmost dignity. And so, I'm absolutely not have any problem with the Dream Act or anything like that, but we need to see that as the major focus is the children and how we are supporting their individual growth and development to their full potential. That's the promise of education, and that's our future. And we started charging people to go to school. If you know anything, Noam Chomsky, in the 60s, when students had time or leisure to think about these political issues, to think about society, and so they took action, right? Mm-hmm. Which was a beautiful thing. Well, that was threatening to those who see all they see are dollar signs. And so then, well, let's charge them to go to school. So that has also become, just like testing, this kind of way of squeezing money out of students, out of our children, by having them have this debt, and so that they don't have the leisure to get involved like they are right now. They're involved right now asking us to please, you know, what notice how insane this is.
It is. It's insane. I mean, I still have student loans, and I continually think to myself, why am I paying for a student loan for a master's degree that the Department of Education has said is worthless? I mean, there's so much craziness going on right now. I mean, they've said that the master's, you know, getting a master's degree just in no way supports better teaching. Well, I know for a fact that it helped my teaching immensely. So yeah, it is. It's insane that we are all strapped by this debt. And in my case, not only am I strapped by debt, I don't even know how to get back into the public school system, because I would get fired. I would get fired because I would express my opinion and I would refuse to administer the state test.
Right.
So we're really trapped, which is why we've got to do something about it. And another thing that's really important for parents to know, because I think a lot of times, I know in my neighborhood that they think, you know, these great test scores, I live in suburbia, so we have very good test scores. They're so proud of their school. But what they don't realize is that these tests are creating a test-oriented culture versus a talent-oriented culture. And what is going to happen is we are producing an entire generation of non-thinkers who are not going to be able to interact globally. They're not going to be able to think and make decisions and think creatively or critically or conceptually. And that's what we need. We don't need a bunch of kids that become adults that only know how to fill out a bubble sheet. So even when test scores are good, I say, you don't understand. That doesn't mean anything. Really what that means is your kids have gotten really good at playing the game.
Right, that's right. We would, when it was very interesting, because when we would do this, when I would do the tests, and as I say, and then they were, you know, you actually had to think, and there were actually questions in history and science. The kids would almost always, they would test like at the 12th grade level.
Wow.
Because when you're following an individual child and you're following their interest, you can offer all of the subjects through that interest, and that child will just blossom if their needs are met. But you've got this business model that doesn't even see that there are needs. They're not needs, they're just wants. And it's sort of like, well, now wait a minute. Do you know anything about child growth and development? Do you know anything about what you need to have someone unfold to their full potential? Do you even understand it? Do you even understand that? Do you understand that we have spent a fortune, you know, in research on this, and that you are saying that we don't apply it? Do you realize how insane that is? You know, that's where we're at.
It's beyond insane. And what's even, and to add to that, is that we have all these children. The low socioeconomic areas are the areas where they are teaching to the test out the wazoo. I mean, these children, all they get is teaching to the test, and they don't get music, art, PE, recess. They don't get to move their bodies the way they need to move as they're growing and developing. So these children, they're pushing them to do well on this test, and they are not sheltering them from poverty. If they would shelter these children from poverty, they could begin to grow and develop as learners. But if you are hungry or exhausted or sick or cold, you're never going to do well on a test.
No.
And the truth is, these are the schools they're failing. So they're targeting these areas because the truth is they can't succeed under those conditions. So these schools will fail, and then the privatizers can jump in and buy them out and create a charter, you know, whatever, a voucher system, whatever they want to do because they have the money. And all of these children suffer as a result. Something that people don't even think about, I think, is when this happens, when a school fails, that entire community has been disrupted and often destroyed. And it just breaks my heart to think about these children who already are suffering from the conditions of poverty, then having their entire community, you know, just completely in shambles due to people that have a dollar sign on their head. They're not thinking about the child. They're not thinking about the child at all.
No, they're not. In these communities, too, you realize that racism isn't dead because there is absolutely no concern for the environment that these children are in. For do they have books? Are they going home to a warm meal? Are they fed? Do they have this all of these things? And the other interesting and disgusting thing is that when Proposition 13, which became kind of a national, when it happened in when Reagan started it here in California, then it took off like wildfire. And so the taxes that a community was spending on education in their area, the percentage was locked in, so that say like in an area like Palo Alto, where the percentage of their taxes that went into education was quite large. But in these poverty-stricken areas, and where many people of color lived, the percentage that they spent on education was very, from all the taxes, was very small. And so it's locked in. So that needs to be changed, because until that's changed, you're never going to be giving the amount of money that you need to be giving to rejuvenate that community, to give it really what it needs. And those are the issues that reformers should be looking at. Those issues, not how can we privatize education. How can we get rid of libraries? How can we demean public service?
Yes, and you know what's scary is they're making these children in the low socioeconomic areas grow up even faster, in my opinion, because the message they keep sending is poverty is not an excuse. It's become this sort of like tough approach that, you know, you just need to get over this and study your reading, study your math, and do well on this test. And these children, I mean, it's so wrong on so many levels, but that is not what these children can think about right now. Right now they're trying to figure out, you know, how they're going to get any sleep when they go home to babysit all their siblings while their parents are at work. And as you said, you know, no access to books. I mean, Stephen Krashen has written about this so much, and how they have literally, I mean, they've taken libraries out of all of these areas. I know here in Denver, Aurora, which is has some pockets of low socioeconomic population there, they've closed down some of the libraries there. And then I look around at where the libraries are still open. Well, you know, where I'm at, Centennial, we've got the most amazing library. Of course it's open. But this is where there's more money here. So those children, again, get, you know, hit again with now no books, which we know access to independent reading is absolutely paramount to creating a learner. We know that it actually raises test scores.
Right.
So what do? They take them away.
Right. Yes, it's so, you know, before civil rights, one of the big things was, no, we will not let people of color get an education. You could be killed if you were teaching someone of color to read at some not so long ago. Well, this testing is killing the curiosity of these children. This testing is hurting those children, because not only are they not having their needs met, but then they are being used in this manner. We know that movement is so connected to learning, and yet are we offering movement? We know that if you have a lower student-faculty ratio, especially where kids' needs are in jeopardy, so that there can be an interaction, then you have growth. We know these things, and yet these are not what we're applying. We're talking about chains of charter schools. That's another thing that's very concerning to me, Peggy, is that there isn't a distinction being made between these charter schools that were started by people who, just like me, were concerned about what was happening in public school. And
right.
So they found a teacher that had the credentials, a group of parents, and they start a charter, and maybe it has a particular philosophy or pedagogy like Montessori or Waldorf or, you know, whatever. But, you know, they did it themselves. They started it, and then they get lumped in with these chain charter schools that, you know, some company has started, you know, and there isn't a distinction made, and I think that's the way that a lot of parents have already dealt with what you guys are talking about in national opt out is by starting these little individual charters. And when people say, oh, well, you know, their test scores aren't any better, but that's not the point. Just as you were saying, the point isn't, will their test scores be better? The point is, are you addressing the whole child?
I agree. And I think it's important for people to understand that distinction. I don't think people recognize that the concept of the charter school was a really great idea. What they need to recognize is that there are still good charter schools out there, and I don't think anyone is saying, you know, that there aren't good charter schools out there. Are their test scores better? No, like you said, but I don't even care about the test scores. What I do care about is children getting a whole education, and unfortunately, a lot of these charter schools that are starting up like chains across the country have such loose regulations. What they do in those charter schools is so shocking to me. The stories I hear about just really inappropriate implementation of curriculum or children not getting their needs met through IEPs. I know of a teacher that's a music teacher, and she's never taught anything in her entire life, but they hired her as the music teacher. So there are all these things going on in these chain sort of charter schools or these for-profit charter schools that people don't even know, because they're not going to tell the parents this stuff. And that's not a whole education. That's not focusing on the mind, the body, and everything that we need to focus on.
On the whole child, right.
Yes, whole child. You know, right. A holistic education like Waldorf.
Right.
You know, things like that.
Right. I know the fear of many people when you bring technology into the picture, because I'm an advocate for technology. I mean, you and I wouldn't be speaking right now. I love Skype. I love the internet. I want it to stay open. It's our only source of really. I mean, we wouldn't even know it much about Occupy if it wasn't for the internet, because
right.
We can't, as we've said in this discussion already, you can't rely on mainstream media. For information,
right.
You can't, you know, to get it real information, and so I think that the idea that these charters would use the technology to have kids sitting in rows watching a screen with no adult, no personal interaction, no peer teaching, no interaction with each other. That nightmare is happening in some of these virtual schools.
Yes.
And that was the fear, you see. So that instead of using technology as a tool, which really, you know, just opens up the whole palette for your student, they're using it in this most destructive and terrible way, and in many cases, and people need to be able to make distinctions, but mostly parents need to take the power, as you were saying, to empower themselves, and they need to be educated. And so I keep thinking of like Planned Parenthood and the education of parents before they even have a child, or at least when they first have a child and they're looking for a preschool, how important that is. And yet the funds are being cut from those programs.
Yes.
And
yes,
so,
I mean, they're cutting the funds everywhere in these virtual charter schools. For example, here in Colorado, approximately 50% of the kids that enter one of the charter schools here end up back in the public school later in the year. However, because they stay past count day, which is, I think, in October, the charter schools get to keep that money, which I believe this year came to around $18 million. And you look at that and you can't believe what you're hearing, that these charter schools, who really aren't doing anything except for, as you said, turning on a screen, just got to keep $18 million of public school money, even though 50% of those kids are in the public schools.
Right. Yeah, that's not appropriate. But I know that there are also some positives from this, because STEM education, there were really, you need to be proficient in technology if you're going to be teaching that.
Oh, and, yes, I agree.
And there are a lot of students who know more about the technology than the teachers. And so, you know, idea was, well, then let's get teachers who are both proficient in the subject and in the technology in the classroom. Or let's use the students in doing peer teaching, and can the teacher be humble enough to say, yes, I'm learning from my student.
I learn from my children, I know that much.
Yeah, right, that I do too. And so, you know, there are some positives. Like I say, if the situation is small enough, you can see how well the problem presents itself. Here you have a person who's just an expert in biology, and yet they're really pretty ignorant of the technology.
Yeah.
And the technology can bring you so much in the field of biology. So, you know, are you gracious enough to say, this is lacking, and so I need to bring that in? Or, you know, does a school have to create a whole program around that, especially for students who really are interested in that field, and yet that's not being offered to them in their school? So you can see how that's very seductive when you say that to in a community of color, and you say, oh well, you know, there are these students in your group that if we could just take them out and put them in this situation, they would get, you know, this knowledge and the technology of that subject, because that's what they really want to do. But it's not the same when you take away the human in the picture. And I don't know if they're doing it on purpose or if they're just ignorant.
Right. I mean, that's the question I get a lot. It's like people will say to me, Peggy, why are they doing this? I think a lot of it is ignorance. I think they know what they're doing, and they have the money to do it. So I think there's that group there. I think there's another group that is simply in it for profit, 100% in it for profit. And then I think there are people that kind of think that there's this philosophy of skill drill, that we aren't being held accountable, and they really believe that we need to push home skill drill and rote memorization of facts and formulas. So I think there are different people coming to it with different reasons. Unfortunately, they're wrong, and that's why teachers need to speak up and parents need to speak up and say, you know what, I don't like what my child is doing in school. I don't like the fact that every week my child is doing test prep or given an extrinsic rewards for testing or sitting through rallies to promote the state test, which they do here at the school in my neighborhood. I mean, these things are just so inappropriate. I'm shocked. I guess part of me is shocked that the parents also have allowed it to happen. But I think the mainstream message has been that we need this, and many people have fallen for it.
Yeah, they have. It's really sad. It's so sad that the media is being used to, like, I don't know, brainwash the parents. That's a lot the way that it feels to me, instead of inform and educate the parents. And, you know, that gets right back to it, which is, if the parents are making the choice, then they need to have all of the information available to them. And so, you know, something like the book Theories of Development by William Crane, well, that should be, you know, available to parents. Okay,
yes,
you've made the choice now, or you have a child and you have the responsibility, and now we know that, you know, stimulation from the very beginning is the most important thing. I mean, those first 2 years are just so important for the life of that child. We need to invest in the parents and get them to see how important those foundational years are. If we really cared about the future of the children in, you know, in America, that's what we would do. Well, and that's why I feel like Planned Parenthood is so important, in investing in Planned Parenthood and investing in early childhood education, and that isn't foundational. That's supposed to be like, oh, well, you only get to do that if you have enough money.
It's like horrible. And, you know, they have the money to do that. I mean, when we're talking about early childhood, you know, like you said, they've taken away from Planned Parenthood. They're getting ready to put really harsh restrictions on Head Start, from what I have read. And they're getting ready to implement testing for younger children. And so if we have this money, why aren't we using it, as you said, to educate parents and support parents in understanding child development, all of these things that would make all of us better people? I mean, right. Instead, we are just taking these mandates and saying, okay, we'll do them. We'll go forth and we will allow you to test our children. And it is so harmful in so many ways.
Oh, it's very harmful. But, and the Head Start, I mean, I really support Head Start, but I feel like I don't want to, if Head Start has to agree that they're going to have these preschoolers and these tested, then that's not the Head Start that I want.
Right. I mean, I can't imagine.
If their money's going to be tied on to taking the childhood away from the child in Head Start, you know, then I don't want it. Give me some other kind of Head Start.
Exactly. That's not Head Start.
No, you know, that isn't.
That's not really childhood.
No, that isn't. And so, now you have a blog, which I've told our listeners about, Pen with Peg. Can you talk about the blog and why you started it?
Sure. You know, after the Save Our Schools March, I guess I kind of just thought, you know, the government, the Department of Education will hear us and something will happen. You know, naive me. I really believed that the message was so strong that something would happen. And I started the blog before that, but because it didn't, it really made me feel the need to express my voice even more. And so I just started writing, and it was my opportunity to express my voice as a teacher. And I guess the first blog I wrote, it was last spring, shortly, you know, when they were planning the Save Our Schools March. And Anthony Cody picked up, I want to say, my very first blog and published it on his blog, Living in Dialogue.
I love his blog.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yes.
It's wonderful. And I had written a letter to, I guess it was to Obama and the billionaires. I'm trying to remember what the title was. But it was more or less just expressing my disdain for corporate education reform and that somebody needed to listen. And that's how it started. So I try to keep it updated. Right now, I haven't written in a few weeks because things have been so busy with United Opt Out, but it is my opportunity to share the truth, in my opinion, to share the truth about what's going on and not allow mainstream media to make us believe things that aren't true.
Yep. Oh, I'm so glad. I really think the blog is fabulous, Peggy.
Thank you.
Peggy's blog is Pen with Peg.
Or Peg with Pen.
I'm sorry.
I know.
Pen with Peg. Can you give the web address?
Sure. It is pegwithpen.blogspot.com.
Peg with Pen.
Yes.
Is that what you just said?
Uh-huh. Pegwithpen.blogspot.com.
penwithpeg.blogspot.com.
Yes, but it's Peg first.
And did I do it again?
You did.
Peg with pen. Peg with pen.
Yes.
.blogspot.com.
That is it.
Oh, I'm so glad I got it right. Now let's do, now let's, and that you have great ears. Now let's do the National Opt-Out website.
Okay. It is unitedoptout.com. And I also want to let the listeners know that it is getting a major facelift, and hopefully that will be up and running in about 2 weeks. So one of the things that, we discussed, is that we lack is technical, savviness to create a website. So right now, it's very useful, but it's going to be even better in a couple weeks. It's going to be more organized and a little easier to access the information you need. So again, that's unitedoptout.com.
It's all one word.
Yes, and can I mention the Facebook page as well?
Oh, yes, I do. I was going to bring it up if you didn't.
Oh, good, and it's a completely different name. So this one's a little longer. It's called Opt Out of the State Test, the National Movement. And it's a group, so you have to join it to become a part of the group and actually be able to write your comments. Now, you can go and look at it without joining, but if you'd like to give us your input, which we would love, please ask to join.
And so let's do that one again. Opt out of the state test.
The national movement.
The national movement.
Yes, that's where this all started, was with that page on August 16th.
And it's a page on Facebook. And if you want to be able to, you can go see, you can go look at the page. But if you want to comment, then you just, become part of the page.
Yep, that's it. You just ask to join, and one of the administrators will accept you.
Great. Okay, so that's Opt Out of the State Test, the National Movement on Facebook, and that is where I found Peggy, and I was so delighted to see it happening, and invited her on to Education Now, and just so glad, so glad to have you here with us today, Peggy, and excited to share this. Now, could you give us the dates and a little brief thing on the actions again that Opt Out has planned?
Yes, the upcoming date in January is January 7th. We have declared it National Opt Out Day. We are asking parents to write letters to the school district stating that their children will be opting out of the state test. And if you are not yet ready to take that action, you can simply say you don't approve of high-stakes testing. Something else to know is we have a Zazzle store, Z-A-Z-Z-L-E, Zazzle.com. And on that site, you can purchase different opt-out information, one of them being a postcard. Now, it's important to know we don't profit from this site, but Zazzle is a great place to just go and create a postcard or a bumper sticker, and then they just take care of everything. They create it. They ship it, and so that is a place you can go if you're interested in just quickly getting a large bundle of postcards, for example, to pass out in your neighborhood on National Opt-Out Day, or bumper stickers or pens. So that's
Are there buttons, too?
Yep, there's buttons as well.
Yeah.
And again, the date's January 7th.
Right, okay. And then and be prepared that you will get people saying, oh, let's not create more junk. But...
Yes.
Can we do this all using, the computer so that we don't create?
You sure can. The main reason we created the store is we had people going to Occupy movements, and they wanted to pass out, hundreds of postcards, for example, on January 7th.
Right.
So I think that is where it would be the most useful, is if you have a large group of people and you just want to, one of the ideas we had considered is how great it would be if you went to an Occupy movement, this is what I'm hoping to do here in Denver, and have a stack of postcards, pass them out to parents, stamp them, and throw them in the mailbox right there. And what a powerful movement that would be to make that action happen on that day. So that would be the benefit to using Zazzle.com.
Great. Let's get that let's get that web address out there again. It's Zazzle.com. Can you spell Zazzle for us?
Sure. It's Z-A-Z-Z-L-E, and I believe, I'm going to look it up here real quick. I think it's just Zazzle, and then after it, if you, well, when you get there, just type in United Opt Out, and our store should show up.
Okay. And so Zazzle store will be on the UnitedOptOut.com website.
It will in 2 weeks. Right now it is not there, I don't believe, but in 2 weeks we will have actually a little widget. That's a new term I've learned. A little widget for our Zazzle store.
That will be great. One thing that I didn't say that I wanted to say is that in talking to some professors who teach if you're going to become a teacher, get your teaching credential,
program.
Right, the teaching education programs, is that there's more to this that we haven't discussed about opting out. Because if a school does not test, they lose money. And so that is why there is this don't tell parents they can opt out. You don't tell them how they can opt out. You don't offer it as an alternative. You don't ask the parent if it's okay if you test your child. You just assume they have to go and say, oh, I don't want my child tested. You know, it used to be they couldn't do anything unless they asked you.
Right.
You know?
And I will say this regarding the funding. I think that differs per state.
Right.
Here in Colorado, if you opt out of the state test, because it's non-participatory, it doesn't affect the funding in that sense. I know that does not exist everywhere, though. And regarding what you're saying about, you know, children being forced to take this test, all week long I have been dealing with a particular Department of Education, and they pretty much... I just laugh because they write me and they say, you don't understand. A child cannot opt out of the state test. I always respond by saying, actually, they can opt out. I mean, they cannot legally force a child to sit in a chair and take a test. So the important thing to recognize is no one can be forced to take a test. They can try to exert punishments and consequences, and that's where parents really need to be educated and have an understanding of how their state works. And I would say this, as you research, and you can use our website, don't assume that what the Department of Education tells you is true. Many times, they are lying. So, and you know, they may not even know they're lying. They may have been told that this is what they have to say, and they may believe
right.
it. But don't assume what you hear is true.
Right. So what
Colorado,
you're saying...
Go ahead.
No. So what you're saying is that even though these are national, I mean, this is national standardized testing, That funds that are given to you from, to the state through the national, from the federal funds, that is not, cannot be affected if your school does not take the tests. That's the question.
That's a good question. So I'm talking about state funds, the federal
right.
funds. Yeah, the federal funds, my understanding, first of all, is that at least here in Colorado, the majority of the funds are state funds. The federal funding is very minimal, and I actually have the number written down, not in front of me. But so that's something to remember in terms of where is all the funding coming from. My understanding here in Colorado is the majority is state funding, not federal funding.
So, but No Child Left Behind was a federal mandate.
Yes, indeed.
That was a federal mandate, and that relied heavily on standardized testing.
Yes.
So there is some kind of connection to funding and those standardized tests, and it's got to be on the federal level.
Definitely, and I think in addition to that, it also depends on what your state has agreed to do.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, like with the Race to the Top funding, well, if you have agreed or if you applied for Race to the Top funding and got it, you have now agreed to do certain things. So, therefore, the state is going to say, we simply legally must do these things because we receive this funding, and therefore we have to follow these guidelines. So it's kind of an example of, wow, you know, they accepted these fundings. They said they could use our children, but no one asked us.
Uh-huh. Well, the quality of education in California went from, we were second place only to New York in the nation pre-1980s. And the funding was to education was so critically cut to the schools through Proposition 13. That's when you saw this drastic drop, and we are now in like something like 47th place in the nation in education. So there is the funding is what is so scary.
Yes.
Because there's already so little going to education, so much less than should be.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you're talking
about. I agree.
I think here
in Colorado, they cut over $400 per student this year. I can't remember the exact number, but it was a very large sum per student.
Right. And yet they're going to spend more on testing.
It's $25 million here in Colorado this year on tests. $25
million. $25 million that could be going to hiring more teachers and creating a better environment. And I've talked before about I don't think it's really feasible to heat some of these huge structures that we've built to, you know, to have education in, that it would be better if we had smaller schools that were closer to where people lived and then used those big buildings for other things or something. But, you know, it just seems kind of ridiculous to me. So it isn't that I don't think that we need reforms. It isn't that that I'm a person that, you know, wants us to go back to some good old days. It's that I really want reforms that are best for the community and for the kids and for families and not, you know, this what I see is going on is like really destroying public service.
Completely.
Yeah.
Yes, I would love community schools with wraparound services to protect, you know, children from the effects of poverty. Things like that. I know all educators would love to see that happen. And it's unfortunate that they won't even, the corporate ed reformers, don't even want to mention the word poverty. I don't know that Arnie Duncan has ever even said the word when discussing education. It kind of became a game of mine to listen to him every time to see if he'd mention that poverty actually factors into why our education system is struggling. He never says the word poverty.
Yeah. Denial.
Yes, complete denial.
Yeah, complete denial. Another symptom of insanity. Well, it's been so fun having you on, Peggy. I've really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Athena. I've enjoyed it as well.
And is there anything that you wanted to tell our listeners that, you know, we didn't talk about?
I don't think so. I just think the important thing is to recognize that opting out of the state test will only do good things for not only everyone's individual children, but our communities and our country. If we do not do this, our democracy is failing. It is failing, and we are not providing an equal and whole education to all children, which is what we are supposed to do. So opting out of the state test is our first step in reclaiming that for all children.
Yes, that's wonderful. I totally agree with you. Hear.
Thank you.
So, and I'll be sure, you know, at the outro to this interview to mention all of the websites again and the blogs. And I thank you, and I'm really looking forward to keeping in touch with the movement and maybe having you on again as we move along and see how things progress.
Oh, I would love to do that.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Athena.
Oh, thank you, Peggy. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That was so fun and exciting and filled with hope for me. Thank you for listening, and a big thanks to Peggy Robertson for her time and her work on behalf of the children, the teachers, and especially the parents through her work with United Opt Out National, the movement to end punitive public school testing. After our interview, Peggy sent word that she had totally forgotten to mention that there are other states beginning to create their own Facebook opt-out pages. There is one for Indiana and one for Texas at this time, which she felt was a good sign of things to come. If the money spent on education in our nation was spent with the needs of the developing child at the center of the reformers' discussion, it would truly be a new day in public education for our families and the nation's children. Websites for Peggy, Opt Out, and others mentioned in this radio podcast are Opt Out of the State Test, the National Movement, which is a Facebook page, and you can get there just by going to Facebook and putting in their search there, Opt Out of the State Test, : the National Movement. And then on the web, United Opt Out National, : the Movement to End Punitive Public School Testing. They're on the web at no 3Ws, just UnitedOptOut.com, all one word, UnitedOptOut.com. And then Peggy's personal blog is PegWithPen at 3Ws.PegWithPen.blogspot.com. That's all one word, 3Ws.PegWithPen.blogspot.com. And then if you want to visit the Save Our Schools March, that contingency, you can find them on the web at 3Ws.SaveOurSchoolsMarch.org. That's 3Ws.SaveOurSchoolsMarch.org. Email, a personal email for Peggy Robertson is writepeg@juno.com. That's WRITEPEG at Juno, JUNO, .com. And once again, you can find the call to action for the educators on the web. Just Google Educators United Equity Call to Action. They're at 3Ws.OurCity-OurSchools.org/statewide-call-action-public-education. But just Google them at Educators United Equity Call to Action, and you'll find it there. If you cannot, join us for the Education Now launch, of course you can listen and download free anytime at this website. Please send your comments about Education Now, this podcast, or any of the other radio podcasts to Hermes@Pacific.net. That's H-E-R-M-E-S at Pacific, P-A-C-I-F-I-C. .net. Or join Education Now on Facebook and comment there. Just put Education Now !! in the search and you'll find us on Facebook. And you can comment there, and you can also join the conversation there about all matters concerning education. You can also make donations at the Education Now website, or this website. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Education Now radio podcasts are listed on the American Montessori Society website at 3Ws.AMSHQ.org. Look in the local events pages. I am sending warmest holiday wishes to all of you. This is your host for Education Now, Athena Melville, saying goodbye for now.
are on the road must have a code that you can live by. And so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.